why do you let him do it? And I said, Mom, it's all in fun. Can't you hear us laughing? It's all part of the gag. She said, no, you tell him I don't like it. This was my mother talking. I'm a grown man. And she says, you tell him I don't like it. So I told him.
Can you share with us his response?
No.
Oh, thank you, Aaron. We said earlier that Sherwood did not succeed in marriage. I can say firsthand, he certainly succeeded with three wonderful children. And his son, Greg, was in this afternoon and shared some thoughts with us. Very emotional part of this very emotional day. In 1979, Sherwood reminisced with Lon Simmons about his life and career. He was a native of San Francisco.
I was born and reared here, out in the Sunset District. I'm a local product. Never left. I left briefly, as you might know, to do a little thing here and there, Chicago and L.A. and Hawaii, but there ain't no place like the Bay Area to this day, so why leave it?
You know? You ever finish school?
No, never did.
You ever go to school?
I went to school. I went through the 11th grade, yeah. And otherwise, I'm self-educated. That usually opens up a whole kind of can of worms. You know, people look
they
at
ask you to leave.
Yeah, I
the
figured
same,
that.
They ask you to leave for the same reason you left the radio station a couple of times.
Yeah, right.
His own childhood, Sherwood says, was confused. And we'll hear from that part of Don Sherwood in an interview he did with Lon Simmons in 1979. We'll hear that very shortly. Okay, Don.
You know, the funny part of it is, I wasn't a rotten kid. I was confused. I took puberty. Is it puberty or puberty?
I don't know.
Something in there. Yeah, pubescence? Well, pube, yeah. Pube, I guess.
Whatever
pube.
It is, you need a convertible.
The old pubes. Puberty. I took it pretty hard. It was very confusing to me. I did like some of the things that were happening to me at the time. But it was confusing, and I went bananas. I went a little ape. And the consequence took me 5 high schools to get through the 11th grade. See, so that's confusion, Lon.
That really is.
No matter how you look at it.
Tough to figure out which class you're going to.
Yeah.
What did you major in high school?
Recess, tea dancing. No, I didn't ever stop long enough to major anything. You know, I just trying to stay one jump ahead of the principal.
Radio, of course, is what we all know him for. It was almost by accident. The idea came shortly after he got out of the Navy.
I went to see an old principal, gal who ran Continuation High School, which was out in the Mission District, one of my stops during my scholastic career. She was the only one that ever smiled at me, because most of them were busy yelling and screaming and saying, get out of here and don't ever come back. And she was the only one that smiled at me. So I went back to see her and said, I don't know what I'm going to do now. I'm really baffled. And she said, down the street here, about 3 blocks on 22nd and Mission, is a radio school, and you've got the GI Bill. Why don't you go down? And me? Radio? I never even thought of it. And so I went down and went to radio school. And it was a year's course, and I finished it in a week. Figured out how to do it, came down, took an audition at KFRC, which was then Mutual Donnelly Network, and I was announcing big bands from upstairs here a week later.
Putting your hand over your ear?
Oh, yeah, because I'm a good imitator, see, and I just listened to the radio for a week and listened to them announcers, fellas, and that was it.
Don Sherwood with some memories of himself, recorded in 1979 with Lon Simmons. There are all kinds of people who are responsible for Don Sherwood's days at KSFO, but there is none more important, the man who hired him. Gene Autry ultimately paid for his salary, but the man who took the chance to hire him and then take him back when he got in trouble with the law and just got in trouble with people and his life was messed up. Carter Smith spoke of him earlier. The man who was a mentor for so many people here at KSFO, and from a business side, was Mr. KSFO, was Bill Shaw. And earlier today, Bill Shaw talked with Jim Lang.
Bill Shaw. Good morning, Bill.
Hello, Jim.
How are you today?
Well, I'm sad.
Yeah. You were the man who hired Don in the first place, aren't you?
Yeah, Yeah, I was the guy that brought him back to KSFO.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the best.
Yeah, I agree.
I've heard a lot of talent over the years, including Arthur Godfrey. And for a guy who had an impact on his community and a feel for people and a feel for the area in which he lived and value to the station, there was just nobody who could touch him.
I bet you had some battles, though. I mean, how do you control a guy like him? He certainly...
Well, you don't control him.
I see.
You take a guy like that on, warts and all, and he could be a pain in the clavicle, as you well know.
Yeah.
But it was worth it, and I thoroughly enjoyed him.
Well, I did, too, and... Over the years, of course, you must remember some of the crazy things he did. I was just reminiscing about the race we had and all that, but he used to come up with more ideas in one day than 10 other people come up in a year, you know? And the guy was really inventive.
Well, Jim, it was a pleasure to listen to him, and it's nice to have a guy in the station that you really enjoy listening to.
All right, great. Thanks for talking to us, Bill. I know you're feeling like we are, that something is going to be missing out of our lives after today.
Right.
Bill Shaw in a conversation this morning with Jim Lang. Bill Shaw, the man from a business standpoint who really made KSFO. They talked about the race, and we're going to be talking, or you're going to be hearing Sherwood talk about that race, the one from Stinson Beach Ferry Building later on. Sherwood worked for Bill Shaw. He worked for several program directors, but the program director that he worked for the most and who had the greatest impact on him, man, he was at odds with a lot. It is traditional in radio. It happens all the time. The talent, the disc jockeys, and the program directors, they never see eye to eye. They're always at odds with each other. Neither thinks the other is doing the right thing. But Sherwood and Newman, they had those battles, but they got along, too. Newman is what I said. Al Newman was his name, one of Sherwood's program directors.
You were a lot more successful at being a program director, and a lot of it had to do with Don Sherwood, the fact that you still had him as your morning man.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a great important part of that station. He was the greatest, one of the greatest radio talents. I guess the greatest radio talent I ever worked with, really.
You were very close to him in a way because one of your sons is named Danny after his real name, Danny Cohalen.
That's right. He was the godfather of my son, which he told Danny that he would take no responsibility of any kind. That's what he told him as the godfather.
As at the baptism, right?
Wherever it was, that was, he said, I'll be your godfather, but I take no responsibility of any kind for you.
You know, we were talking about the fact that Don never really had a lot of close friends. He had a lot of friends, you know, people who said they were his friends, but you might have been just about the closest. I mean, you had dinner at your home with him. You knew him pretty well.
We were dear friends so many times, and then we would become like strange enemies, and then we'd become back dear friends, and later in years we got to talk. We spent many, many hours talking together about life. In fact, I was just took out yesterday. I didn't know this was happening. I'd written a story about Don,
mm-hmm.
and I was looking it over on a rewrite on it, and one of the things that was in the story was a quote that he'd given me, that the phenomena of existence. He loved that quote, the phenomena of existence. And he knew that in his head. He knew the miracle of life. He knew the enchantment and the beauty of the world. He could really explain it as good as any writer I knew. He didn't write, but he could say it, you know, tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't get his life into it. And we would talk about this many times. And he loved quotes, and that was one of them. Out of the mud grows a lotus was one of his famous ones that he did
right.
For his show, which was very ahead of its time to save the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
This was way before Brando and Fonda and all these people. But his involvement in the world, like, again, that term, it just jumped out at me. In fact, as I was starting to write, I thought that's what I should start out with, is that quote he gave him, the phenomena of existence. But he never could find it for himself.
Did he have a definition that you could write down, or would you have to listen to him?
Well, it was just that he saw the miracle of the world.
Mm-hmm.
He could get outside himself. That's what was so brilliant about Sherwood, and that's why he drew people from automobile mechanics to college professors, because he could touch them on so many levels. And he would pick up a thing like this term, the phenomena of existence. He would probably take that. He's talked about it on the air several times, but I knew in later years when we talked about it. this would be something that he told me. One of the last things he talked to me about was he wanted to get completely off alcohol, completely off cigarettes, mm-hmm. and he wanted to sense the world fully as a totally clean in his system. He said, I want to find out what it's like just once in my life, totally clear.
Couldn't do it, though.
Well, I guess later on he got off for a while. He would get off for a while. Cigarettes, I remember when he was in the intensive ward one time. They called me at 5 in the morning. This is when he was on his houseboat.
Mm-hmm.
I dashed down there, and we got him to the hospital. He was in the intensive ward, and I came back about 2 hours later, and they'd have the oxygen tent off him. He had a Lucky in his hand.
Oh.
He just went against the all the rules and everything. It was just the way he had to live.
Al Newman, former program director at KSFO, some memories of Don Sherwood. Mr. Lucky, one of Sherwood's themes, how lucky we are to have known, to have shared, to have loved Don Sherwood. We've got many more memories to share with you this evening. We're going to be hearing from other people who talked with us today, and we'll be hearing more from Don Sherwood. Al Newman was the program director for Sherwood here at KSFO. The first PD, program director if will, is a fellow whose name you may recognize. When Don Sherwood worked at KROW, Crow in Oakland, his PD there was Russ Coughlin. Yep, the very same Russ Coughlin, Channel 7 right now, man who ran KGO radio for a while, and who's back in San Francisco. Coughlin reminisced today.
Of anybody, you go back just about the furthest with Don Sherwood. You've known him for what?
Yeah, I guess since 1947, 1948.
Right after the war.
Yeah. And he had been working as a... I had known him slightly before, and he went to work as a band singer. He sang with Ray Hackett's band at, mm-hmm. at CBS here.
That's something that's forgotten. Yeah. I know that he could imitate singers so well, and he was always right on key and pitch, and so I figured he had been a singer at one time.
Well, he was better imitating than he was singing on his own.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's true with a lot of people.
But he was, and then I was the program director of a radio station in Oakland, which was KROW at that time. It's KBL now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he had... I know something had happened at CBS, which is kind of legendary, and he was no longer there. And this was before yoga and everything was possible. And he gave away all his earthly belongings,
mm-hmm.
and he had a T-shirt and a pair of jeans. And he went to work for a warehouse friend of mine, a guy named Alan Gilman, and he was caretaker for the warehouse. And he laid on a pallet in the corner of the coal warehouse and gave up all his earthly belongings and stood in his head. And that was his first wackiness, I guess.
I never heard of that one.
Oh,
that I didn't know about.
Well, then he finally, you know, he got tired of that. Yeah, that wasn't any fun, and he had no earthly belongings, so he thought he'd have to go to work. So he came over to me. I was a program director in the station. I knew he was a good announcer, and mm-hmm. I didn't know the extent of his talent. So I was no great star picker, but he was a good guy. But he had no clothes. In those days, you had to dress up going to work, and I had to lend him money at the National Shirt Shop on the corner of 17th and 19th and Broadway, and he bought a coat and a shirt, and I paid for it. He never paid me back.
Oh, never.
He stiffed me. He was a cheap guy. And I worked with him there until he moved over to KSFO.
Well, there are rumors that he was part of the Nick and Nudnik team. Who were the actual Nick and Nudnik?
Well, Nick and Nudnik was actually Nick Nicholson and Vern Loudon, who uh-huh. was the director now at KGO-TV.
Uh-huh.
And then Don, later, when Nick left and went to Los Angeles, then Don moved over and became the other guy. But he actually had his own show.
Mm-hmm.
He did an afternoon show for 3 or 4 hours in the afternoon for us.
When did he join KSFO? Was it KSFO or were the callers?
Yeah, he went directly to it was KSFO at the time. Alan Torbett, who was manager of KROW at that time, moved over to KSFO, and a year later, Phyllis Diller was working for us at that time, and he inveigled Phyllis over as a copywriter, and he took Don away from us, and Rod McEwen, I think, was working for us at the time. I think he tried to get Rod over. So he kind of moved everybody over, and they went into the same disc jockey format, which was unusual at that time, the format that you guys have here.
Right. Talk about legends. With that radio station, he said Phyllis Diller, Rod McEwen, you, Don Sherwood, all at one time.
Yeah, I don't know about me, but I was program director. And we had a lot of it. It was a nut house. It was Mondo Wacko most of the time.
Russ Coughlin with his memories of Don Sherwood when they were over at KROW in Oakland. Aaron Edwards and I were just sitting here listening to Cog and sharing memories, and Aaron was recalling it. Sherwood was a singer.
Yeah, he tell the story how one day he went, just like he didn't have a background in radio, he just went out and took his audition. found himself working, he decided he wanted to sing with a band. He couldn't read music. And in any case, he got himself a job with Ray Hackett's orchestra at what was then KQW, presently KCBS. And he became a staff singer there, and he also did the announcing. He often would tell the story how that they would change the key sometimes to fit the orchestra a little bit better. Right away, he was lost because he had memorized it the other way. But, you know, you talk about controls, and I was just thinking about something. People would ask, how come this guy can't get to work on time? Everybody else does. If you started coming to work late like this, you know, after about the third time, your boss would say, hey, why don't you stay in bed?
Mm-hmm.
This was part of him. And so in any case, sure, KSFO wanted him to come to work on time. The truth is that he was living about four blocks from here, right up here on Knob Hill. And so the manager, Bill Shaw at the time, had arranged for a chauffeur and a limousine to go to his house early in the morning, ring the bell, wait till he got dressed, and bring him to work. Well, this lasted all of 3 days. Don stopped answering the door. He knew who it was. And as far as his abilities were concerned, the ratings that you've heard mentioned, I'm sure, on and on throughout the day, were so unusually high, so astronomical, that station managers in other parts of the country would send their program directors to San Francisco, put them up in a hotel for a few days, and that was their instruction. Listen to the radio and take notes. And they'd come back with what he and I were doing at the time, we'd hear about this later, and try to set up an arrangement where their morning DJ and their newsman on it developed a rapport, and it just didn't work. You can't say you'll say this and you'll be that. It had to fall together, and it fell together only naturally, and that was it. But they came here trying to emulate him.
You touched on the ratings, and we haven't spent a lot of time on that yet tonight, and we're going to hear from Dave McElhattan, one of his competitors at the time, later on this evening. But that's one of the reasons, obviously, that Sherwood could get away with showing up when he pleased.
That's right.
Because he owned this market. I mean, he was king, and nobody, I don't have the statistics with me, but nobody has come even close to his popularity.
Jeff, one day, I found him packaging albums of music. And I said, what are you doing? Because he didn't give away gifts and play games like that. He said, and he told me what he was doing, and I was a little stunned. He could rub you in the ground so badly, and he did. He sent an album of organ music to every morning DJ in the Bay Area and closed a little handwritten, hand-signed note, while I'm on the air, you might as well play this. And, you know, they were crushed when they got it, but it was the truth. He had the audience.
Incredible man, I'm sure you all know, but the law requires us to tell you you're listening to KSFO in San Francisco, the world's greatest radio station, and we're reminiscing tonight about the man who made it that. We've been getting a little serious. Let's get away from that and go back again. The popularity of Sherwood was his humor, and another one of the bits that we've dug out of our archives, part of the tales of old San Francisco.
We move northward up the great Sacramento Valley and into the mountains. There in the corner of the state, we find Alturas, site of the famous Alturas Rock Festival. We move into a little narrow valley, a little dirt road, and there in the bottom of it is an old weather-beaten shack and an old-timer. Good morning, old-timer. Good morning, good morning, good morning.
Howdy, Stevie. How are you? Pull up a pig and sit down.
No, thank you very much. I prefer to stand, if you don't mind.
They're a little slippery in the early morning.
Well, what with this rain and all, and they're very intelligent. They don't like to be sat upon.
Well, if you don't sit too hard, they do like the close contact.
Warmth, I guess, huh?
Well, no, they just like, they're friendly. Friendly. They got a big brain, body weight brain ratio.
I thought this morning that I'd talk about the communications explosion that we live in today and ask you how it differs living in this state when the old days when things were so slow. Everything took so much time. You didn't even know it was Wednesday until somebody told you.
Well, I've been reading up some books on Europe.
Well, do you read a lot?
Well, yeah, I do that. Watch the birds.
I wouldn't think you'd be well-read because you have a kind of a, if you pardon the expression, No, that one word won't.
No, I just finished a good one, Jane and Dick.
Oh,
the market.
I see.
Good one.
About Europe, huh?
But anyway, I was thinking about how they sit around there, they have wine and cheese and look out at the Mediterranean. We do much the same thing in the old days. We used to have a little something called Hannibal's Raisin Beet Wine.
Hannibal's Raisin Beet Wine.
You get about 5 pounds of beets, some water, and some seedless raisins, and a little yeast. And then just take your time, sit there and let her sit and scoop it off as it comes to the top.
I think I've seen that.
But you don't want to eat. You don't want to eat any cheese with it.
No, I've seen that.
Just leave it alone.
That Hannibal beet raisin wine. On the bottle, they have an eye chart right on the back of the label there. And that, when you get through, you just check to see if.
That's right. And when you can't see the big E, quit drinking.
I do believe that fellow had some of that wine. He's chasing a sheep instead of a fox.
Ah, the tales of old California. Sherwood and Carter B. Smith. I know we've touched on it a lot tonight, and I know it because I witnessed it. These things were not scripted. Believe me, it was total ad-lib. They'd have an idea, maybe one word or... and some of these, Super Frog especially, they were serials, but they'd sit down to record these in the studio, whether it was Aaron or Carter B. or Jack Carney or whomever, and they just have an idea, and in the serials they'd remember where they left off yesterday, but there was no script. It was all spontaneous. A lot of it, of course, didn't get on the air, but some of the things that we're playing tonight did. I mentioned earlier the name Dave McElhattan. You know him most likely now from Channel 5, where he is the news anchor, the primary news anchor. Dave, for years, worked at KCBS when it was all news radio, and before that, when it was kind of like KSFO, or it hoped to be at any rate, and McElhattan hoped to overtake Sherwood. He didn't. I haven't heard this conversation, but earlier today, Dave McElhattan talked with Buddy Hatton.
Bill was the top personality in the market. Sherwood came along from Nick and Nudnik over at KROW, which is now cable.
Which one was he?
He was, he must have been Nudnik.
Was it Al Newman and Sherwood?
No, it was Nick, what was his name? The fellow used to do poetry on the air.
People ask me that all the time, and I don't know who the other half of that team was.
Well, I can't remember, but we certainly know who Nudnik was.
Yeah,
Sherwood. And he came over, started here, and all of a sudden just exploded on the scene. And the irony was that Bill Weaver soon departed, and they said, well, what'll we do? They didn't have a clue, so they put me on. So I went on opposite Sherwood.
What year was this, Dave?
Oh, this was in the, I guess, 54, 55, 56,
yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But the ironic thing is, I mean, I didn't know how much trouble I was in, right? What did I know? I've been working all night.
Had you heard him?
Oh, I hadn't heard anything. You know, when you work the all-night shift, you're really out of touch with the world. And Rich Smalley, who's standing right behind you, was my engineer on Music Till Dawn. And we were just lucky to stay awake during the night, that's all. I mean, Sherwood Schmerwood, you know, what is this? But I soon found out who he was in Utah. Somebody called in today and said that they felt that Sherwood was, our very own version of Don Quixote. Well, actually, my theory is that Sherwood was a cross between Peter Pan and the Bad Sea.
Peter Pan and the Bad Sea?
Yes, because... he was leading us all to Never Never Land, and he was just evil enough to be interested.
That's beautiful. That is beautiful.
I mean, there was a texture to him. You know, you wouldn't go into diabetic shock listening to Don Sherwood. So anyway, I started doing the show. And I was firmly convinced that people were running out, and I'm sure I was right, people were running out and buying radios not to listen to KCBS, but to tune in KSFO. And I used to listen to Don, and I'd listen to, and he had a voice, you know, that no matter what he said, if he just said, hi, kid, how are you?
That's right.
There was a magic to that voice,
yeah.
And you heard that magic. He really was the Pied Piper of Pandemonium.
When did you first meet him?
Let's see.
Remember?
I can't remember the first time, but I remember we were trying to do all sorts of innovative kinds of things to stir up interest over KCBS, so I broadcast from the window of Brooks Cameras at Kearney and Maiden Lane.
Yeah.
And we did this remote broadcast. It was one of the first remote broadcasts. It was before you guys went out to Roose Atkins to broadcast on Market Street.
And so we were doing this broadcast, and I said, you know, anybody wants to drop by? It's a little lonely and dark and cold out here. Drop by and say hello. And sure enough, who should walk up but Don Sherwood? He closed the door here, walked down the hill, walked in. Hi, how are you? Got some coffee for an old friend? And we sat around and talked. And then there was a day that I will never forget because the ratings came out, and I beat Don Sherwood in the ratings.
No kidding.
Popped up and became number one instead of the Avis of Bay Area Broadcasting. And Sherwood called me on the air from the booth right over here to my left, picked up the phone and called me, and we talked. And with the simultaneous conversation on both stations, we talked about that, and I assured him that it was a short-term victory, I was sure, and unfortunately I was right. I went right back down into Avis land again in the next book. But that started something that that I will never forget. From time to time, Don and I would call one another when something was happening. And we would talk, and the conversation would be on KCBS and KSFO at the same time. And, of course, the ironic thing for a kid trying to break, you know, through fighting this legend, which was an impossible task. But salesmen, other people from the station would come in and say, hey, heard you on Sherwood this morning. You were terrific.
Your own KCBS sales guy.
Yes, that's wonderful, wonderful. It's like booking passage on the Titanic, you know.
Are you...
One thought.
Sure.
One thing, and I told Don this a number of times, for which I am eternally grateful, is that he finally retired and let me be number one. And that's the only way I ever would have gotten there, because Don Sherwood could have sat here, could have, you know, not been here, as he did so often, and still have been the king of the road. More people tuned in to not listen to Don Sherwood on KSFO because he was out in Never Never Land. Then tuned in the next two top stations.
I remember
Doug Pledger and I used to sit there looking at each other saying, why us?
Why us? Once someone said that someone asked Bill Shaw, how can you put up with him? I mean, he's sick and he comes in, he's hungover and this and that. And didn't Shaw say, when he's at his worst, he's better than anybody in this business?
That's right.
Even at his worst, he's better.
Well, you know, there were two people that changed the shape of broadcasting, really. Nationally, Arthur Godfrey, and locally, Don Sherwood. Since Sherwood, like Godfrey, was an original, they didn't copy from one another, but they had many of the same traits. Eclectic interests, they were interested in so many different things, and they would say exactly, especially Don, was really a free spirit. He was able to do what we would all like to do, tell the boss to go to hell and make it stick.
That's right.
You know?
Yep.
And I'll tell you something I've been thinking about all day. When I woke up this morning, there were 10 calls on the answering machine, and I knew that meant trouble because normally I get maybe a couple of calls. I sleep in a little bit late, working late at night. There were 10 calls. They were all about Don. And it was that offhand kind of way that you find out about something that really impacts on your life. I got a call from the desk at KPIX saying, we've had a call from KSFO. They'd like to talk to you about Sherwood's death. Just offhand like that, assumed that I would know it. And I can't, you know, the thing is that he really was Peter Pan, and we did feel it. You know, I remember when he went to Hawaii, and everybody kept saying, John, you're out of your mind, further out of your mind, because that's the worst possible climate for you, to be in Hawaii and to live over there while you've got emphysema.
Yeah.
But, I mean, tell this to a guy who was smoking while he was still carrying an oxygen pack around so he could breathe. You know, Don just never compromised with life. And that was part of the charm and part of the magic and part of the reason why we used to listen to him on the sly at KCBS, too.
Thank you, David. You doing something special on your news over Channel 5?
You mean besides crying?
I mean besides that, yeah.
Yeah, we'll have a piece about Don. You know, I think the interesting thing about this business is that Fred Allen really said it best in his book, Treadmill to Oblivion. He said, you know, the life expectancy of a personality on radio is equivalent to the lifespan of a moth flying into the flame. It's all over so fast, and when it's over, people forget. When Arthur Godfrey, who was the biggest thing that ever happened nationally in this country in communications, died a while back, it was hardly a ripple. Do you remember?
That's true, yes.
I mean, I was astounded. Even the aviation magazines that should have known better did very little to mention his passing and to have a sense of grief and the fact that something, that there was a period to the end of the story. And I think one of the things that has moved me greatly today is that on this station, I've been listening to all the people remember, from out of the mud grows the lotus and all the rest. And also, I think it's ironic, too. You can't say this, but I can. The people at this station have been told not to talk about the fact that the station is ending. The old KSFO ends in December. A new organization will take over, and KSFO will continue, but it won't be the same. You can't talk about that, and I can. I think that somewhere in world's greatest jockey, disc jockey land, Don Sherwood is laughing.
I do, too.
Because he has made it possible for so many people to talk about what you can't talk about today.
Mm-hmm.
And put the period to a great area. It's like that line from Othello. Put out the light, and then put out the light.
Dave McElhattan, what a special man he is in his own right. We thank him for his thoughts and his very special wife, Bonnie Chastain, whom listeners of KSFO today know so well. Dave McElhattan, as we reminisce about the life and love affair of Don Sherwood. Character? Yeah, you bet your life he was a character. And he knew characters, created characters in San Francisco. One of them was Cookie Pichetti. How does he know Cookie Pichetti? Who is he? Well, I probably don't have to tell you any more than Cookie Pichetti is an innkeeper. Cookies on Kearney. That says it all. Cookie's not a man of a lot of words, but he had some brief thoughts today.
One night he came in here on a motorcycle. And we have a mirror down the end. And here we thought he was going to have a head-on collision. And down to the floor he goes with the bike. And I look at him and I said, "What's the matter, Don?" He says, "I thought it was going to have a collision." He says, "Don't you see the mirror there?" So that was written up in the Wall Street Journal.
Cookie Pichetti from Cookies down on Kearney Street. It was an unusual day, I'm told, with Cookies today. We talked earlier, and if you've listened to KSFO for any length of time, we talked earlier about the race. What was the race? Well, the race, we'll have Don Sherwood describe it himself in a moment. It was one of the biggest events ever in San Francisco. As I recall, it was spontaneous. I think I was in high school at the time, and I covered it as a high school journalist just on my own. I was a fan of KSFO. It was from Stinson Beach to the Ferry Building. It attracted thousands, hundreds of thousands of people. And in 1979, in a conversation with Lon Simmons, Don Sherwood talked about that race.
At the time, I was a drinker and carouser.
We had him out number 3 to 4 then with me.
I know.
Or 3 to 1.
That's right. Well, anyway, he was an ex-Marine and did a lot of healthy stuff. Didn't smoke. And was living at home at the time.
Left his wife around.
Raising his kids and all that stuff. And nice, good American kid. Still is, as far as whatever happened to him. Anyway, I got half in a jug one afternoon, and I called him from a bar. I used to do that, and I regretted it every single time. I called Bill Shaw once from a bar, and that was a real big move. Anyway, I called him, and I said, "You think you're some kind of big shot, and so forth, on this machismo business thing I was into?" I said, let's have a contest of strength. Strength and health and all that sort of thing, and I can whoop you, boy, because you're just a pipsqueak. So he said, "All right, we'll have a race. How about from the beach to the ferry building?" And I said, "Oh, that's ladies' day with Lee. Let's forget that. Let's go over to Marin County and run from there. Let's make it a marathon, 26 miles. Men run marathons." All of this, mind you. And about the furthest I had moved was from the bar stool to a taxi cab, right? And then into the apartment. So by golly, he took me up on it, and we got started on the thing, and it built and built and built. And pretty soon it was the day, right? And I remember training for it. I gave up drinking for one day, and I walked back and forth in my living room about 10 times just to see if I could do it.
And because you'd given up drinking, that was probably one of the reasons.
Yeah, I was bored stiff.
Pacing was
right.
More
it was
like
the first time I saw the walls and stuff, and it was kind of interesting. It's in the ring. pictures. A very attractive decorator fixed for me. Anyway, we got up early in the morning and started out at Stinson Beach, and you know what happened then. It was one of the biggest promotions
I know part
ever
of what happened. I lost it about halfway through. But that was, everybody along the way, there must have been 500,000 people out there.
It was one of those things that happens once in a while where there wasn't a darn thing going on in town. There was no ball game of any kind, football and or baseball. It was Sunday in February. Nobody had anything to do, and it was a beautiful day. So people got caught up in this thing. We started at 6 in the morning, and you guys were broadcasting, and now he's in front, and now he's in front, and I'm walking along. About a mile into it, I knew that this was a big, big... Well, even getting up to get there was a big mistake, but... people got caught up with your broadcasting of it, and Aaron was on the truck, and there were all kinds of things going on, and we had an entourage, and the thing just growed like Topsy. It was unbelievable. We had people lined. Traffic was stopped all the way through Sausalito. The bridge had a lane that was, you know, bumper to bumper. And when we got down into the Marina District, the police estimated something like 75,000 people on there, and then we got that classic picture taken at the Ferry Building where everybody was there, man. It was really a super promotion. And I'll never forget one thing happened to me that day. I came in third.
In a two-man race.
No, it was a three-man
yeah,
race.
It was. We had a surprise.
It was a three-man race, and I came in third, quite a bit after everybody else, but I finished, and that surprised everybody. But I got up on they had a station wagon there, if you remember. Mm-hmm. They had a prize. I got up on the station wagon, and everybody, this sea of faces, and everybody applauded, and they were having a ball. The whole thing was just a lot of fun. And I kind of raised my hands, and everybody quieted down. And I took the microphone on the public address system, and I said, "You probably wonder why I asked you here today." I said, "It's to announce my candidacy for mayor of this fine city." And the roar of the crowd, and I felt like Caesar or Hitler must have felt. And I mean, that's intoxicating, baby. I tell you, I stood there, and this cop was standing down below on the, you know, next to the car, and he looked up and he said, "My God, I think today you could do it, you know." And I got...
Did it give you any serious...
Oh, it sure did, man. I really got all up on that one. I thought, gee, I'd like to do this a lot without having to go through 26 miles.
Great story. Don Sherwood talking with Lon Simmons about this race, which had to be... late, around 1960, as I recall. Aaron, we were sitting here laughing and loving what we were hearing, and you made the comment, you know, "I remember it as if it were yesterday."
That's right. Let me back up to today for a minute and say that these laughters about this man who passed away today, I feel, would be exactly as he would want to be remembered. He would not want a sad, tearful tribute. He would want us to remember him as we are remembered.
It is the only appropriate
way. Things
way.
That he did, and this is the greatest memorial. That day was really a memorable one. I drove the station wagon. The news department had the station wagon at that time. And in the station wagon, I had some socks, extra socks for him, several extra pairs of shoes, tennis shoes, sweater, whatever he'd need while I was his kind of closet driving along. Between Stinson Beach and the Ferry Building, which is about 8 miles up and down at that time, I don't know what they've done to the road since, but it was all uphill and downhill, tight turns. There aren't any service stations.
Whoop.
And every so often he needed a service station, but they didn't build them in the right place.
You're not going to say a shame word again.
No, I won't do that. But anyway, he waited till he got to Lombard after he crossed the bridge, and he was in trouble. Poor guy. Every so often he'd change his tennis shoes. So my job was to kind of stay close to the runners, which was difficult after Lang took off and left Sherwood way back there. So I drove up a few miles, came back a few miles, see if he needed anything. And I did a lot of driving that day. The next day when he walked in here, and I did not expect to see him. I did not. I think he would have been in less pain if he had broken both legs. He was so sick. His legs were swollen, his thighs, and he was walking. Well, he could barely move his feet 2 inches. He was walking like a wind-up toy. You've seen that. quit on. He was in pain. And I figured I could make him angry and make him laugh at himself. And he said, that was a hell of a race yesterday. And I said, I don't know about you. My arms hurt. I did a lot of driving. But he was in pain, and he was ready to kill me. But anyway, the race was spectacular. The turnout of people was unbelievable.
The picture of which he spoke which, there, yes, we've right, all we, seen. But and I was there to witness it. It was just a sea of humanity. From the ferry building, everywhere you looked along the Embarcadero, right, wall-to-wall people just jammed in to see some disc jockeys.
And all I did was have a race.
Yeah.
And I knew that he regretted it because he was truly crippled for about 2 weeks. He could not move. And the fact that he even completed it was certainly noteworthy. He didn't talk to me for a while after I told him about my arms hurting.
Certainly one of the many memories of Don Sherwood. We all have them, and we've searched through recordings and personal archives today. I found mine, one that I think happened in, mid-60s. I was the kid, as Sherwood called me. He used to call me the kid, and I deserved it, the young punk kid. And I was doing the morning news, and Carter Smith was on the air from 9 to noon. Sherwood got off the air at 9, but he had hung around the station. What prompted it, I don't know, but they invited me in on Carter's show to try to read a commercial.
Angel, something very special. I want to thank you, D.S., for getting Jeff...
We're not taking any calls.
For bringing Jeff Scove in here, who is going to do a commercial. Now, are you going to try to help?
Yeah. I'm gonna offer a dollar to this young man to do this commercial, if he can do it
without
a mistake.
Or laughing.
A verbal mistake or giggling. And I promise to touch no part of his body or to do nothing unusual during his performance. If he can make it through, you got the dollar.
And
all
if
right?
I, can I hold can, the dollar as the intermediary?
If you can't, it'll just show that you don't belong in radio, which we all do.
Here we go.
There are all kinds of potato chips, but one kind rings the bell. If it's bell, it's swell.
Ever notice how some potato chips kind of lose their taste?
Pathetic.
No, that laughing's okay. Somewhere between the artichoke dip and the zucchini casserole, that'll never happen with a Bell brand potato chip. You can dip them. You can take it off your income tax, Jeff. Bell brand. Very big. Very big on flavor. Well, what applies in the castle tonight?
There are all kinds of potato chips, but one kind rings the bell. If it's bell, it's swell. Bell brand. There you
go. Oh, boy. I won't ever forget that day, and I remember having to go back to do, I think, the 11 o'clock news about 45 minutes later and still thinking back on that. Another memory I have of Sherwood, and I shared this with some listeners this afternoon when we were talking, but I'm sure you'll recall this kind of thing, Aaron. Off the air on the intercom system here, he could be the most foul-mouthed person you would ever know, and he would be hitting the intercom system. We talk back and forth here from the news department, for instance, to the disc jockey booth and to communicate what's coming up next and things of that sort. And we'd be talking, and purposely he'd go into this long, funny tirade with a most filthy language, and the record would end, and without missing a beat, he'd turn on his microphone, and as if, you know, it's now 7:45 and nothing has happened.
You know, I think we almost gave him a heart attack once when he did that. And somebody in the newsroom said to him on the intercom, are you aware that the intercom is leaking on the air?
Oh, yeah. We would have lost our license a long time ago.
Well, of course, he just froze when he heard that.
Great memories. All kinds of people we've talked to today, and one of Don's very close friends, the world's slowest rising young comedian, I think is what he called him. Ronnie Schell, you know him, you've heard him on KSFO, you've seen him on television. Earlier today, Ronnie Schell shared some memories of Don Sherwood.
Ronnie, I remember you used to live about a half a block from the station. In the mornings, you'd come in and see Don and visit with us.
5 Mason Street.
Yeah, you lived right on the side of the hill up here on right. North Hill.
And then we'd all go together and have breakfast at the, was it the Chameleon Room or something like that?
I don't remember which room. I was too busy listening to you two guys.
There at the Fairmont, yeah. Got great memories, great memories.
Tell me what you remember about him.
Well, he was so unpredictable. He was predictable. You could predict that he'd be unpredictable. I loved him. He was fun to be with. You know, it's difficult, Aaron, to express my feelings right now. You know, that to say that I feel a great loss and emptiness in my life, having lost a dear friend, a confidant, a fellow performer, and as you know, a valuable human being. I think he brought a
yes.
joy and happiness to all of our lives for over a period of 25 years.
He had a bearing upon your early life in show business, did he not?
He was the one who called me America's slowest rising young comedian.
And
he followed
a...
my career very closely. In fact, when I made my debut at the Blue Angel in New York City, he got a flight and flew there and was sitting in the audience.
Surprise you?
Yes, he did. Well, not really. Just about an hour before I went on, he called me from the hotel and said, I'm going to be sitting in the front row. And of course, when I heard his laughter, then I knew everything was okay, because he only laughed at things that were really funny. There was nothing fake about him, as you know.
Ron, what were some of the